Hi, and thank you for joining us today for Destigmatizing Urology, an official podcast series from Urology Times. As we all know, stereotypes and misleading information circulate within the field of urology, and these miscommunications can negatively affect doctor-patient counseling and decision-making. This series destigmatizes topics in urology alongside clinical experts to help listeners practice more efficiently and foster better relationships with their patients. I'm your host and Urology Times assistant editor, Janelle Hart. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Kevin T. McBerry. He discusses the stigmas associated with enlargement of the prostate or benign prostatic hyperplasia and why more education is necessary to absolve these misconceptions. McBerry is professor of urology at the Stritt School of Medicine and director of the Center for Male Health at the Loyola University Medical Center in Maywood, Illinois. What are some stigmas associated with enlarged prostates from the physician perspective and from the patient perspective?
Yeah, so this is an excellent question because there are misconceptions in both groups, both patients and physicians. So let's just start with the patient misconceptions. In terms of enlarged prostates, the idea is that enlarged prostates, so-called BPH, promotes lower urinary tract symptoms, urination difficulties, things like frequency, urgency, getting up in the middle of the night, that type of thing. I'd say an important misconception on patients is that this is an issue of old, frail men. And when this starts to happen to them, then they are in a bit of denial, an end of life sign. And that is completely inaccurate. Men can start to develop urination troubles due to enlarged prostates, BPH, beginning in their mid-40s. If it occurs earlier than that, it involves a lot of extra work to be sure that there isn't something else going on. But mid to late 40s is when men begin to experience some of these changes. Many of these changes may remain very modest over time. In other men, because of genetics, family background, perhaps lifestyle, something we can talk about in a bit, this can worsen rather rapidly. It is common this happens to old, frail men, but you don't have to be that in order for these things to start to develop. Even though there is many therapies that one can do, it's not a sign of anything ominous for most men. And when I say most, I mean the vast majority. I don't want to say it is inevitable. It is certainly common. And in many cases, there's prompt and good treatments. In other men, it's understanding that this is occurring. And if they can cope with the symptoms and signs of this, and it's not otherwise affecting their health, they don't necessarily have to receive a treatment. They can be observed and followed and monitored. In terms of physicians' misconceptions, and I would say physicians primarily like non-urologist misconception, is that lower urinary tract symptoms from BPH is unavoidable. And it is something which is treated with hazard. What do I mean? They do occur with age, that's true. Although again, many men who have the symptoms don't require a treatment. You need to assess them to be sure that it is not otherwise affecting their health in the sense that they can live with their symptoms and their symptoms aren't a sign of a more serious underlying medical problem. If they can live with it, so can the physician. So they can be, again, observed, active surveillance, watchful waiting, whichever term you like. I think the other issue with physician misconception is that the treatments are hazardous, that our interventions are significant and pose significant risk to patients. And this is decidedly not true. What am I referring to? Well, many non-urologists might think that the only option available for men are things like the TURP, which is an effective treatment for prostate symptoms. But the field has evolved where we have many therapies, many minimally invasive therapies, which do not require hospitalizations, which do not require inpatient surgery, which can be treated very efficiently and safely in the office. Really, patients can come in, have an appropriate office-based procedure for their BPH, and drive themselves home. And after a period of recovery, have an excellent response in terms of symptoms with a minimum risk on sexual function. So that's probably another misconception of non-urologists, maybe even some urologists, that BPH treatments impact sexual function. And that is true that some do, but the newer minimally invasive therapies are much less likely, in some cases, unlikely to have any impact on sexual function at all. And by that, I mean no impact on erection and no impact on ejaculation, another aspect of sexual function, which has probably been underplayed.
So how do these stigmas surrounding enlarged prostates affect management of patients with prostate cancer or other prostate-related diseases?
Well, one thing which is very common is the men equate the urination symptoms of BPH with cancer. And so there can be many sleepless nights where they are worried that, you know, they're getting up at night now and that this is a sign of prostate cancer or some other, you know, like a bladder cancer. This is decidedly not the case. It's actually unusual that a man with prostate cancer would present with these urinary symptoms. I mean, it is possible, but it's highly unlikely. And so there's a bit of reassurance that has to occur to patients to reassure them that this is unlikely to be a malignancy. That's very common. And I think that that fear in some men, you know, leads to panic and perhaps overreaction. And in other men, it may keep them at home sleepless at night and kind of, you know, destroy the quality of their life because they're thinking, oh boy, this is going to be the big one. So I think that that has a decided effect on presentation. The other really dovetails in with what I spoke about before, that these invasive treatments are going to ruin the quality of my life. They're going to ruin my sex life and make me dependent on pads or catheters. And again, that is unlikely to be the case. These, again, are newer missed therapies, if used appropriately, and that is very a doable thing for a skilled urologist, that this can maintain, or in some cases, improve not just their urination quality of life, but also their sexual function. So again, that requires an accurate diagnosis, kind of a global assessment of their urination health, their prostate health, and we can discern these issues out with very good accuracy. So it's a very rewarding place to be in terms of a treating physician right now, in terms of addressing some of these BPH issues.
And so what would you say is the urologist's role in destigmatizing enlarged prostates?
Well, first is, okay, having the prostate enlarged, again, does not mean that it's bad for you. I mean, you can have this and be totally livable. I'll give you an example. You know, you're an older guy, you're starting to get up at night, you go with some urination frequency, but your life is such that you get up a couple of times at night, you sleep in a little bit in the morning and you wake up refreshed. You don't need treatment. If you're otherwise doing okay, if your bladder is getting reasonably empty and there's no impact on a renal function, and the urologist could discern all this, the urologist can live with you living with it, you know? So that requires an assessment and an accurate diagnosis. So, you know, you would do symptom assessment, basically a quantitative measure of symptoms. You would do some prostate health issues, perhaps a PSA, certainly examine the urine looking for things which might mimic BPH, lower urinary tract symptoms, like a man whose diabetes is out of whack will give him a lot of urination symptoms, and the prostate has nothing to do with that. His diabetes has to get in better control. So the urologist is very, very skilled at kind of discerning out these issues and getting down to causality as to why men are having the complaint. And then once you know all this, then it's pretty straightforward in terms of offering men options, a series of options. You can do it serially, you know, like try pills, try interventions, perhaps try more significant surgeries, or men can say, you know, I'm not a pill taker. I'd like to explore a minimally invasive option right away. So that's also completely and totally appropriate. So you kind of line this up, help patients and educate their way through it once you have an accurate diagnosis.
And lastly, Dr. McBerry, is there anything else you feel our audience should know about this topic?
I think there's two other things. One is that going to physicians is sometimes other physicians will say, well, it's only BPH. Live with it, Grandpa. And I see this where you're like, well, you can have surgery or live with it. And physicians, need, non-urologists I'm speaking to, need to understand that from the patient's perspective, which is the place where we physicians sometimes falter, as we look at as a physician, not as from the patient's chair. From the patient's chair, he looks at some sequelae of BPH, urination symptoms, equivalent to having a stroke or a heart attack. Now, it's not often life-threatening like one of those diagnoses, but from the patient's chair, he equates in terms of the severity in his life, he equates those. A heart attack is the same as a stroke, which is the same as going into urinary retention. It's not a little thing to patients. So sometimes physicians underestimate the impact of these problems on their patients. And the other is something we're starting to come to grips with was, what can patients do to either improve or prevent? And it's pretty straightforward. It's a very consistent picture that there are lifestyle risks which worsen or contribute to the development of BPH. And by that, I mean diet and lifestyle. And by that, I mean weight and exercise. Just like with heart disease, prostate, bladder health has a very strong influence from a patient's diet and lifestyle. Well, what's the message? Well, very conveniently, a bladder and prostate healthy diet is the same as a heart healthy diet and a heart healthy lifestyle. So that means lower caloric load. That means fight obesity, or try to prevent obesity. And I would say more vegetables, less meat. And if it is meat, less red meat, more fish, chicken type of thing. So the same thing we've been hearing for probably two decades about heart disease and lifestyle. And by that, I mean exercise. And I don't mean Olympic type exercises. It's moderate exercise. It's 10 or 20 minutes a day, or at least several times a week. It's losing weight. 10 pounds can make a big difference, not just in your heart health, but also in your urination qualities. And patients will report that all the time, sleeping at night. The other thing is there are many non-invasive or minimally invasive treatments which can be useful to patients, and they need to understand that. And, you know, the word's getting out, but patients need to hear that more. And they need to talk to a urologist who is up on this minimally invasive game to hear about that. And the other thing is that it turns out that family history is a strong predictor. You know, if dad and grandpa both had urination problems, it might be very well that you are at risk for urination problems. And so maybe the dietary issues and the lifestyle issues need to be emphasized earlier.
Be sure to subscribe to Destigmatizing Urology on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps. You can get the latest clinical perspective and practice management advice by visiting www.urologytimes.com. Thank you for listening.